work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
oh yeah, started to burn so many things we found, and Northern California is burning, for God's sakes. We are in the midst of terrible, terrible times. I mean, it's just one thing after another. Harvey, Irma, Maria, the lunatic in Las Vegas, and now these horrible fires in Northern California, which is paradise. I have always loved Northern California. It's one of the most beautiful places on earth. And I just talked to my buddy Mark Summer, who may call in. He's in the Bay Area. He says the whole Bay Area is filled with smoke. It's toxic. It's acrid. You really should be wearing a mask if you're in the Bay Area. I mean, this is really an apocalyptic time. We have a certifiable, unelected lunatic in the White House who is capable, apparently, at any moment of blowing up the earth, starting a nuclear war, has absolutely no idea what he's doing. He is in the process of gutting, for no apparent reason, and by executive order, the health insurance system on which tens of millions of Americans, including many of you, depend for staying alive. Why he's doing this makes no sense whatsoever. Not even in capitalistic terms, not even in terms of profiting corrupt allies, does it make any sense what he's doing to the healthcare system? And on and on and on, you know, we have people dying in Puerto Rico and in Northern California and in Florida and in Texas, and this guy is screaming and yelling about black football players taking a knee during the national anthem. And he spent $1 million of our money, our taxpayer money, to fly his vice president from California to Indianapolis to sit for a minute during a football game, before the football game starts, sees these guys take a knee, gets up and walks out, and flies back to California at our expense. And, you know, I don't have to go on and on. I mean, it's just mind-boggling what's going on, as I'm sure you all know. I mean, it does really feel like an apocalyptic time, an end time. And, you know, first thing in the morning, I'm in Los Angeles. I called my buddy Mark, and he's telling me he's at the hardware store buying a mask to walk around in the East Bay of Northern California. You know, and these are fires that were preventable. In fact, Pacific Gas and Electric was asked, told repeatedly to clear the brush out from under their power lines, which of course they didn't do. This has really fed the fires. It's not probably the principal cause, but you have to remember that these power lines have, especially the utility poles in the cities, these transmission boxes and capacitors and resistance and many of the poles have these boxes on them that are filled with PCBs, which are deadly toxic materials. And when these burn, they go everywhere. And, you know, you've seen, I'm sure, the pictures of Santa Rosa, which is a beautiful, beautiful town, or was. I mean, I have always loved Santa Rosa. I've been able to go there many times. It's in the heart of the wine country. And it looks like a nuclear bomb has dropped on the place. And not from North Korea, for God's sakes. I mean, it's leveled. I've seen many pictures of Hiroshima. And this, it looks like Hiroshima, for God's sakes. And where is the military? Where are our aircraft carriers and our helicopters and our armored vehicles and our soldiers? Why aren't they in Puerto Rico, Florida, Texas, and Northern California helping people? Why aren't those armored vehicles going up and down the roads? You know, and going into the areas where the fires are and dealing with this stuff. Why isn't there an aircraft carrier off the coast of Puerto Rico with our Huey helicopters that were so effective in Vietnam, flying back and forth into Puerto Rico with water and food for people in the remote areas? why aren't they flying in prefab houses and solar panels with these helicopters that cost us taxpayers so much money? Why aren't there tanks and Humvees going in and out of Northern California, getting people out of there? I mean, you know, the 101 is closed. You have to be in California. You know what it means, is the 101 is closed in Northern California. It's like cutting your arteries. So, and of course, we have absolutely zero response from the insane asylum that the White House has become. And the reports now are more and more disturbing about this guy's behavior, that he's screaming and yelling and you know, basically banging his head against the wall. I'm sure deep down inside he hates being president. Can't go out and, you know, do what he normally does. It's a nightmare. So I want to greet our guests, who are really, really top-notch people. This is a wonderful crew. Joel Siegel is with us. He's put this together, focusing on Puerto Rico. He's a former staffer for John Conyers, Congressman John Conyers, and has a tremendous personal history of activism. A friend of my great old buddy and mentor, Abby Hoffman. Joel, you with us?
It is an honor to be on your show, Harvey, and I want to just say no nukes, since you came up with that term. And I'm honored to be on a show with the person who led the effort after the Three Mile Island accident, when you did those concerts at Madison Square Garden. I remember them like it was yesterday, with Bonnie Raitt and Springsteen and Jackson Browne and Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and James Taylor. You are an American hero, man.
Well, I was a very small part of those concerts. I was able to do help with the media and do the program book, and believe me, it was a tremendous experience. And now, well, we're going to have to thank you for your kind words. And if you would, Joel, who else is on with us? Can you all, my other guests here, can you introduce yourselves?
Brother Harvard Ayers?
Oh, thank you very much, Joel.
Harvard,
and
yeah,
I would just like
Harvard.
Simply to say that what is happening in Northern California is because the area was so dried out from climate change caused drought. But I don't hear any media saying that. I mean, even MSNBC and the progressive media aren't saying that this may well have a hook from climate change. That's all I had to say at the moment.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, the weather has been completely, uniquely unseasonable. I was on KPFA yesterday with the great Dennis Bernstein for a half hour, and he had people... That's in Berkeley. And he had people on from Northern California. And they all said the same thing, which was the weather. They've never seen weather like this before. You know, it's in a very, very wet spring. And it caused a tremendous amount of vegetation to grow abnormally thick. And then it was an incredibly dry fall. And all this stuff, and summer and fall, and all this stuff dried out. And so they had, you know, all this fuel, and then all this turned to tinder. And, of course, the utility company was not doing what they were supposed to do, which is clean the vegetation out from under the power lines. And, you know, and the fire, as we speak, is 0% contained. You know, this should be front page news. This should be... This is the apocalypse coming to one of the richest areas in the world. I mean, Santa Rosa is a wealthy town. There are plenty of people there who aren't wealthy, but it is a wealthy town. This is not like, you know, when you Americans see natural disasters, they just assume it's all in the third world, and these are people of color and blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is that Santa Rosa is very white and extremely well off. And, you know, I've ridden my bicycle around those neighborhoods. It's beautiful, or was. And these places are gone. This is you know, Hiroshima after, maybe without the radiation, but my God, it's amazing. And Harvard, you're 100% right. It's all about global warming. It's all about climate chaos. And you know, and simultaneously, the lunatics in this administration have been killing the climate change initiatives that Obama took when he was president. So, in the middle of three major hurricanes, an unprecedented holocaust of a wildfire, the government is trying to reverse unilaterally, without the Congress, by the way, global warming protections that were taken. So, Joel and Harvard, do we have another guest on?
Yeah, we should have. It's either Irene Villar, and she is the founder of Americas for Conservation. And
well, is she with us? Okay,
if she's not with us. It's Tara Rodriguez. She's the Bezosa leader of the Department de la Comida and beneficiary of the 24 weeks resiliency fund. Is either Tara or Irene on the phone call?
Okay, so we're missing them. If you want to send them a text or an email, please do. But we'll proceed, the three of us.
Sure.
We want to deal first and foremost with Puerto Rico here. So I put out a while ago a call, which was, you know, an idea that was floating around. Wasn't my original idea. When Puerto Rico is going to be rebuilt, which we hope it will, it be done solar, with solar panels, and that the grid, the centralized grid, not be rebuilt, and instead that we go to microgrids in all these remote areas, and of course in San Juan, neighborhood by neighborhood. So, Joel, do you want to start the discussion of that and tell us how things are proceeding? And Harvard, you're welcome to jump in at any time. We have the full hour to get through this.
Thanks, sure. Harvey.
And by the way, Harvard Ayers was at Appalachian State. He's professor emeritus of anthropology. He's also a climate scientist. And in North Carolina, he's a legend. He started so many environmental organizations here and in Virginia, and he just happens to be the chair of the North Carolina Climate Solutions Coalition. Got a resolution passed in North Carolina in Boone calling for 100% clean renewable energy, and is actually transitioning his town of Boone, Appalachian State, to 100% clean energy, mainly relying on solar. In terms of Puerto Rico, there has been the establishment of, I would say, one of the most exciting coalitions I've ever been a part of. It's about 30 Hispanic organizations in Puerto Rico and in the diaspora. It's mainly, I would say, climate activists, environmental justice activists. And then it's a solidarity network of about 30 to 40 green and climate action organizations. And here's what our goal is. Our goal is two basic, you know, pillars. It's one is emergency relief to Puerto Rico now, so people don't die because they don't have adequate food, water. People are dying in their hospitals because they don't have enough diesel fuel to run the hospitals. 85% of the population of 3.4 million people, these are American citizens, they got no electricity. Harvey, one-third of the population, they don't have access to clean drinking water. 25 of the island's 69 hospitals are connected to the power grid. And then seriously ill dialysis patients, they've had their treatment hours cut by 25% because the centers, they do not have a steady supply of diesel to run the generator. So the idea is to solarize Puerto Rico so they're not dependent on fossil fuels. So if in the event of another hurricane, which Dr. Michael Mann, who wrote in his book Dire Consequences and was in Charlotte, North Carolina, just a few weeks ago, said that, you know, Category 4 and 5 hurricanes are going to be the norm, why not build a solar system or a wind energy system for the grid? And there's about 15 people, including Dr. Harvard Ayers, and Harvey, we want you, of course, who are actually going to start, you know, talks with the Puerto Rican government. We know Tesla's involved. The solar energy corporations are now involved. And let's solarize Puerto Rico. And if we can do it there, why not do it in 50 states across America and around the world? Clean energy. No one
Sounds
dies
great.
From solar energy.
Sounds good to me. And what kind of mechanism do we have to move this agenda forward?
I could say that one more time, Harvey. who is going to push this forward? How is this going to be pushed forward? It's going to be a combination of, I would say, the major green organizations, Puerto Rican green organizations on the ground, and that includes the Departamento de la Comida and the 24 Weeks Resiliency Fund, those in the diaspora, members of Congress. We'd like to find a member of Congress to introduce legislation to solarize Puerto Rico, because there's going to have to be tax credits and various investments. So we've got a coalition that's being built that's tied to Congress, but it's people like Harvard Ayers and Jeffrey Wolf, who's the expert on solar, who's part of the Justice Action Mobilization Network. That's the new Climate Action National Network. Jeffrey is an expert. We want to bring them to Puerto Rico. They're going to be invited by the on-the-ground NGOs to actually come up with, you know, with the plan. We want to bring in also Mark Jacobson of the Solutions Project and you, of course, and start talking to the Puerto Rican NGOs and the government leaders and get going and find out, okay, what's this going to cost and how are we going to do it?
You know, Joel, it's really not a technological problem to do this. I mean, really, installing solar collectors is relatively easy. You just need the collectors and the frames on which they sit and the wires to wire them up to whatever microgrid that you might have, including hopefully some really great batteries coming to us from Elon Musk out there at Tesla. And that is easy to do. It's not a technological problem. It's a political problem, which is exactly what you, Harvey, have been saying for the lower 48 and for the whole of the United States, is that there's one man up at the top keeping all this from happening right now. And it's similar down there. He's done such a sorry job of coming up with the support system, which we have in spades, to really save lives in Puerto Rico. So, again, it is a political problem, not a technological problem. And I kind of delve in both, but Joel's the political guy, and I know a little more about the technology.
Well, let's stick with the politics just for a few minutes, and then I'm going to want to go into detail with you, Harvard, on the technology. The rumor is spreading, of course, that the real reason that Trump is holding back, well, aside from the fact that he's a vile, well, I could say it on the, I could use the appropriate language here, but we won't get picked up by certain stations. I mean, PRN is okay with it, but so we're going to stay away from the seven deadly words. I don't think the language has been invented to describe Donald Trump. I mean, for many of us, and Puerto Rico, of course, is now the pivot point of it, but it's gone even beyond that. I mean, who'd have thought Northern California would be put into the play? When I look at Donald Trump, I've never met anyone like this. I don't think any of us have met a person as loathsome and low and vicious and vile as this guy. It's not just that he's in the White House. It's an existential reality that our species would create, would produce a creature like this. I mean, this is a person who seems to be utterly without compassion, without empathy, without common sense. And you know, aside from the guy who was sitting in his hotel room shooting people, and by the way, I have to, you know, we do have a full hour here. I can't resist mentioning this. Greg Powis, the great investigative reporter, who has, you know, unearthed so much amazing stuff about stolen elections. And I do have an article up on Truth Dig now about stolen elections that you might want to take a look at. But Greg actually went to high school with the shooter in Las Vegas and knew him in high school and said that he was really, you know, withdrawn and unsocial, but very, very bright guy, and was just, Greg wasn't surprised that this guy did what he did, having known him in high school. I mean, that is really, really freaky. So, Trump, it is rumored, it is believed that aside from being the low viral scum that he is holding back on aid because he wants to drive people out of there, drive people out of Puerto Rico, and then turn the island over to his casino buddies and his own hotel people, and turn Puerto Rico into what Cuba used to be, which is a big brothel and casino, and you know, buy up all the land there for nothing after everybody is starved and drowned out, and just make it into another Trump hotel. Does that sound off the wall to either of you guys?
No. In fact, Harvey, I was trying to suppress my laughter because you're dead serious. What do you say you have to laugh to keep from crying? When I worked for Congressman Conyers, my title was Senior Legislative Assistant and Speechwriter, but I was also the liaison to the Bush White House. And, because I'm from the South, he used to say, bring in the diplomat, and I'd go to the White House or wherever we would meet. And you could actually sit down and have, even though we had completely different views, he was at least moderate, and his people were moderate, and we cut a deal on PEPFAR. Our office led that.
On what? What did you cut a deal on?
Oh, it was PEPFAR. That was the $15 billion to Africa and the Caribbean for drugs, for TB, malaria, and AIDS.
Okay.
And I had the good fortune to bring in Bono to that because I got lucky and formed a group called the Global AIDS Alliance. But the Bush administration, they didn't really push back that hard. In fact, they embraced PEPFAR. And then we got $40 million from the Bush administration to keep the Detroit Public Medical Hospital that served all the poor people open. And I worked on the Hill for almost 15 years, and I've been lobbying up there probably for 23. I've never in my life seen anyone like this president. However, I do right now, I am working at the highest levels and dealing with the Trump administration. And I don't know if I'm embarrassed to say this, but it's what you got to do sometimes if you want to save lives and get the funding you need for Puerto Rico or to solarize Puerto Rico. And what it's going to take, it doesn't matter whether it's a Democratic president named Lyndon Baines Johnson, where you had to have a civil rights movement, right, led by King and many others to push the 64 and 65 Civil Rights Act. It's the same thing, the universal health care movement, we had to push Obama on that to even pass the Affordable Care Act. We wanted single-payer Medicare for all. We're going to have to pressure Trump, and it has to be relentless pressure, to mitigate and circumvent and overcome all these obstacles that you talked about, his state of mind, his incompetency to be, to govern this nation. And it has to be a critical mass that has enough power and funding to get what we want done. And if that means it's a fight peacefully in the suites and the streets, I learned that from, watching the Vietnam War movement and Abby Hoffman and divestment from South Africa and saying freeze. The kind of unity that we're going to need to do this is starting to happen, but it needs to happen faster and quicker because we're dealing with somebody who unfortunately has about 40% support of the American people. And that means we have to get the other 60% to speak louder than that 40%. And that's not easy with the foundation industrial complex and a lot of groups who don't want to work together, but there are enough groups who do want to work together. We just need leadership to make it happen. And that's where political will comes in and experience, but I'm confident we can make that happen.
Well, have you found in the Trump administration anybody that you could think would even begin to listen to solarizing Puerto Rico?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Well, okay, we won't inquire further.
I will tell you this. I serve on a board of directors in D.C. With this person, and I will tell you that I was very much involved in voter suppression and gerrymandering and co-founder of the Voting Rights Caucus. That's 81 members now with Barbara Onwine. And I will say that the ultimate goal is we have to replace our Congress and our president and our state general assemblies with progressives, because you can't go green if you stay red. It's just impossible, whether they are progressive Republicans or progressive Democrats, whatever, as long as they're 100% clean renewable energy. These forest fires, the climate scientists have made it clear, it's empirical. A large percentage of them were climate change induced because there's not enough moisture, as you know, in the leaves and the trees and the ground. But if we don't get a new Congress and a new president and a new General Assemblies, we're not going to survive as a species. And a larger question I think that one has to ask, those of you who are listening to this show, is where is the strategic and political unity from the grassroots and the grass tops to be very, very serious about getting government leaders who are responsible to the people and believe in E Pluribus Unum. And I just don't see that enough of that right now, Harvey. And maybe it's going to take people like you and Harvard to provide that kind of leadership. They're out there. I know they're out there. I love the universal health care movement. I don't like to talk like that, but, you know, people said we could never even get the Affordable Care Act passed or move single payer. We did it because we had a movement in 435 congressional districts in 50 states. And we got the bill passed that no one said that we can get passed. We got 20 million people covered. I've seen it happen, but you need to have a movement that's a united front. We can't be separate and apart anymore because the right wing is unified, and we have to take a little bit of knowledge. How did the Tea Party take over the Republican Party? Perhaps we have to learn from them and do the same thing with the Democratic Party.
Well, the Tea Party was a fake movement. They had the money of the Koch brothers behind them. We don't have that kind of money, but we're not a fake movement. So that's a trade-off. Harvard,
can I respectfully just say one thing? I do believe we have the money. I just don't think we've asked for it, because there's the 1% right and there's the 1% left, whether it's celebrities, whether it's, you know, Ben and Jerry's or Branson. But there are people with money, but they have to see a big old coalition to ask for that money. Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead, Harvard.
Well, I didn't know what he was going to ask me. What were you going to say, Harvey?
Well, Harvard, what do you think about the top? I want to talk to you about the technological side, but what do you think about the politics of getting Puerto Rico solarized?
Well, I think you're going to find a lot of very avant-garde people who are progressives, such as Elon Musk with Tesla, and such as this guy by the name of Harvey Wasserman that happens to be on this call, who can really shake some trees. And the trees are pretty easy to shake with solar now, because every year for the last 10 years, the cost of solar has dropped 10%. It is amazing how much it's gone down. And at the broad level, there's just no problem at all. We're going to need to get people on the ground with the right training. And I have a person up here in Boone that could help us tremendously with this. He knows solar really, really well, and he happens to speak Spanish fluently. And he's a young man that can go up on the roof, which I hesitate to do anymore because I'd like to be able to keep working on this. In any case, there's really an easy path, I think, to getting support for this. And it's not Republican. It's not Democrat. A whole lot of people that were Republicans wanted solar collectors on their houses locally. It was not a party issue. So I think both politically and technologically that we have a path that would at least get some villages started down there and pick several villages, perhaps at first, where they have the most needs for power, and just simply go for it and find the funding for it. Perhaps Tom Steyer, what's the guy's name in California? Tom Steyer. I heard him on TV last night. He's wonderful. He's given millions of dollars to the cause. And so we've got people like that around, and the money, which is what we really need, is probably there if we went about it the right way.
Okay. Harvard, let's proceed with this. I do want to say we do have an empty line. I think that the women you mentioned, I have not called in. Has anyone else called in? No. So we're at 888-874-4888. Especially if you're in Northern California, you want to call in and tell us what's going on. And If our producers in the studio will let me know if someone has called in, that'd be great. I'm not on Skype. 888-874-4888. You can call in.
Can I say one more quick thing, Harvey? I wanted to mention that people are becoming believers that weren't believers a month. What about 6 weeks ago? None of this stuff had happened then. How about in Houston, Texas? How about in all of Florida? And how about the people on Puerto Rico in terms of the hurricanes? But when you have northern Florida one match away from disaster, and now they recognize, well, hopefully they recognize what's happening, then you've got a lot more people who want to move on this. So I think it works from both ways.
Harvard, I think what we can learn from Harvey Wasserman, what he did with the No Nukes concerts, I was in college, okay? I think we're going to have popular culture. Harvey's one of the architects of this. To do
the Muse concerts were an interesting phenomenon. Let's talk about that because it's important if we're thinking about doing something like that again. We had a movement going that started in New England and also in California at the, around Diablo Canyon and some other nukes around the country, Indian Point, Turkey Point in Florida, where there was a groundswell in the early 70s. As the Vietnam War was drawing down, you had a body of activists, many of whom had moved to the countryside. I was involved, along with some other great people, in the movement against the war in Vietnam, really from 65 to 75. But and by the late 60s, many of us had graduated college and started to move out into the countryside. And nuclear power and other really environmental issues had not really much occurred to us. I mean, there was Earth Day in 1970, but a lot of it came out of the communes, of the people from the anti-war movement who had moved into the countryside. And so we had a critical mass going. We had some big demonstrations at Seabrook, New Hampshire, and Diablo Canyon, and Indian Point, and elsewhere. And then in 1979, Three Mile Island happened. And Three Mile Island, it was the kind of tipping point that got such great people like Bonnie Raitt, Jackson Browne, and Graham Nash, and John Hall, James Taylor, Bruce Springsteen, and others to say, okay, well, we got to do this. And it wasn't just about raising money; it was about raising consciousness. And so we had five nights in Madison Square Garden, and thankfully, we impacted a lot of young people like Joel Siegel, and so that's what happened. Now, okay, we've had this enormous event, these series of events, these nightmarish series of events. The problem that we're having now is that it's a total assault on everything sane and human. I mean, in 1979, Jimmy Carter was president, and, you know, we had our issues with Jimmy Carter, but he was reasonably sane, although his response to the Iran hostage crisis was not sane. He did put solar panels on the White House, and then Ronald Reagan took them down, and then Bill Clinton did not put them back up. So it's been a long, bumpy road. The problem we have today, which is different from back then, is that the situation is so unfathomably crazy and on so many fronts. The Iran hostage crisis was crazy. And then Russia went into, the Soviet Union went into Afghanistan, and that was crazy. And Carter, I think his response was not particularly sane, but he was basically a decent, honorable human being. Very, very different from what we have now in the White House. And the problem we have with Puerto Rico and with Northern California is that every time, and with Harvey and the hurricane and with Irma and Maria, is that every time we turn around, it seems to be something else. I mean, if you look at the last 2 weeks alone, it's enough to drive people completely crazy. So, you know, we could do another series of concerts, but for which? And, you know, how are we going to unify all these attempts to save our species into something that really, you know, makes sense? You mentioned Joel, a new Congress, and somebody new in the White House, but that's at least a year away. The new Congress is at least a year away. And all these elections are still being done on electronic voting machines with the voter. And, you know, we now have a whole presidential commission devoted to making sure that people of color don't vote. I mean, we've gone from the Ku Klux Klan running through the South dressed like deads, you know, lynching black people, to a presidential commission using computer technology with the most notorious vote strippers of all, Hans von Spassky and Chris Kovac and Kenneth Blackwell. These guys are all tried and true, proven election thieves. And I, as I say, I've got a piece about this on Truth Dig. Really, Harvard, you're an older statesman here. Where do people turn in this nightmare?
Well, you know, I think we need older statesmen, as you call us, and we are certainly ready to go. But I have seen a lot of people in their 20s and 30s that are ready to go, too. And also, if we have something like Puerto Rico, then you clearly have to have those folks in a leadership post in that. And I think there's probably enough of a critical mass. Get Elon Musk and Tom Steyer involved in these things. The resources are there, the personnel resources and others, and somehow we have to spark an interest in all the people who care the way we do about it but haven't done anything about it. So that's kind of where I am at.
Well, this piece I have at Truth Dig basically says that Gore and Kerry and Clinton are responsible for Trump being in the White House because they all won their presidential elections and they didn't fight. And I suffered through Hillary Clinton's entire book, What Happened, and she never once mentions election theft. She never once talks about voting machines that flip the votes in Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, where Jill Stein did her best to get recounts. And, you know, we know for a fact that Al Gore is probably a billionaire. We know that John Kerry is worth at least half a billion from his connection to the Heinz fortune. The Clintons are worth $100 million that we know of. There's a lot of rich people. You're right, 100% right. The 1% on the left is there, but where are they?
Well, there was a great movie, Harvey and Harlan, called La La Land. And La La Land was about that. It's a great movie. It's about a jazz artist. I happen to be a jazz musician. It was a jazz musician trying to make it in L.A. and an actress trying to make it in L.A. and their dreams and... There's also a La La Land in the progressive movement, and I think we suffer from what I call LOL, lack of leadership. Whether it's solarizing Puerto Rico or 100% clean renewable energy, we're going to have to really get some of the best and brightest men and women, should be multiracial, but I think we're going to have to move to a very different model. Because extraordinary circumstances means you must take extraordinary actions. If Michael Mann is saying that we got about 3 years to start a transition to clean renewable energy, and then Lester Brown, the great scientist on climate change and food and water shortages, is saying we have about 10 years to transition, and we're not even close. We are going to how we organize will determine whether or not we survive as a species. This isn't like, you know, healthcare or housing or poverty. It's very different. We're going to have to look at models in the past that work to transform societies in a very deep structural way. And I would look at the Indian National Congress led by Mahatma Gandhi. I would look at the SCLC led by Martin King. I would look at the AFL-CIO. And I remember I would have these conversations with the old guard of the left, and their eyes would glaze over like, what in the hell are you talking about? But having been in government for 27 years, it's a long time to be in the government. There's a threshold of political power that you have to reach, and it can't be done by 1,700 different nonprofits getting foundation grants. you just can't take on the fossil fuel industry. You can't take on the Republican Party or the conservatives and the Democratic Party or Wall Street with a fragmented movement. We got great people, but I have to be honest with you. I'm scratching my head going, do people not get it that we're going to have to unify in a united front, get an organization together, a network, raise the several millions of dollars, and then start a campaign for 100% clean, renewable energy, no matter where it is, and start teaching people about this threat and let them understand that Jacobson has a plan in 50 states. We can use renewable energy. But if we don't have that level of coordination, we're going to lose our planet and ourselves. And, Harvey, I would ask you, as someone who's been a successful organizer, and Harvard, who's put together many coalitions, why have we not moved to a consolidated, united front in the progressive movement? Why is everybody working in their own silos? We've been losing since the 60s. Can we not, like, think out of the box and maybe think about power for the people? And isn't it selfish for groups to just kind of organize their own silos when people are homeless and hungry and they don't have health care and the world could literally, you know, end in several years if we don't get our act together? Can we not do something different?
Harvard Ayers, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, you know, I really wonder, the question that I would ask is how has the right done that? They
That's
may
right.
have disparate groups at times, but how can 32% of some fairly smart people in our country
right.
still be following the man in the White House? I mean, there's got to be some good ways. I think that progressives generally tend to be kind of they're not necessarily joiners or formers of huge coalitions, and that's why Joel and I have specifically decided to do coalition work, and we hope to build with the number of nonprofits involved with us so we can get that kind of movement.
Well, I got to say, you know, that I think a big part of the problem is the Democratic Party. You know, we have an old guard in them. It's almost like a gerontocracy. You know, we've got Nancy Pelosi. We've got Chuck Schumer. Dianne Feinstein, to my horror, has announced she's going to run for re-election for the Senate seat in California. She's 84, for God's sakes. I mean, what is going on here? I love Bernie Sanders. I think he was a great candidate. He's talking about running again. He's going to be 78. I mean, you know, it's time for a new generation. And in the Democratic Party, I think we have a clear division between corporate Democrats and social Democrats. You know, social Democrats with a small SMD, corporate Democrats with a capital CD. And because the corporate Democrats, the Clintons, the Gores, and the Kerrys, have refused to fight on election protection, and they drag their feet. You know, the opposition from the Democrats to Trump, in my mind, has, from the mainstream, the corporate Democrats, has been very weak. I mean, he has just gotten away with murder. They don't have a majority in the Congress, but they're close, and they have maintained a solid front. But Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are not the people to be leading the charge to save this planet. They are just too moderate and not as articulate as we need. Chuck Schumer is really not articulate at all, and they just don't have it to lead the kind of opposition that we need led. To me, the problem is the Democratic Party, or a big part of it, when you're talking about a lack of oomph or a lack of power on the left. Do you guys want to comment on that?
I've been in the Democratic Party since I'm 20 years old. I've run congressional campaigns. I've been in meetings with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. And I remember John Conyers used to say, Joel, politicians don't start revolutions, they follow them. And I think just as John Conyers and Charlie Rangel and, Ron Dellums ran in the Democratic Party, for Congress. Even Bobby Seale ran for office and Huey Newton, right? I really believe that we need a progressive generation of Democratic Party activists who have to assume leadership positions. And where I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, I belong to a nonpartisan organization, but in my free time, I belong to an organization, and there are about 50 of us, and we literally are taking over the Democratic Party in the city of Charlotte. Nobody expected us to do it. It's a combination of Sanders people. They're a little bit young. But it really is about, and see, a lot of activists say, well, you know, the hell with the Democratic Party, and I'm going to protest. Well, guess what? There's two parties. One's Republican and one's Democrat. The Democratic Party brought us Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, 20 million people covered on the Affordable Care Act. And I can go on and on and on. Instead of pointing the fingers at people, and I'm not saying that you're doing that, okay?
Well, I am. It's okay.
you know, when I started doing universal health care in 1999, I was the only staffer that worked on it until 2008, and it were the Democrats. They would yell and scream at me. The staff screamed at me. The members screamed at me. Why are you doing universal health care? And I'd say, well, we have got 45 million people who are uninsured. So I co-founded PDA and several other organizations to push the Democratic Party into the progressive direction. And it was the PDA who asked Bernie Sanders to run for president. Now, why am I saying this? There should be a national discussion with the best and the brightest multiracial progressive leaders that come up with a strategy. Harvard, he just nailed it. The Tea Party did that. They figured out a real simple equation. How do we take over the Republican Party? They did it. And we can do it too, but it has to be a serious, serious campaign. I remember I asked Ralph Nader, and I said, Ralph Nader, why do the Republicans keep winning elections, and why is the Tea Party winning? He said, Joel, they want it more than I do, than we do. I'm sorry. So I think the discussion about how do we reform the Democratic Party should be done in town hall meetings in every city across this country. There should be town hall meetings. How do we get the Democratic Party to win elections again? And then what does the Democratic Party stand for? If you ask a person, you know, on a corner of in a working day, can you tell us what a Democrat stands for? They'll go, well, I'm not really sure. Okay, what's the Republican Party stand for? Lower taxes, less abortion, less government regulation. The new Democratic Party should say we're for expanded, improved Medicare for all. We're for jobs for all, for 100% green renewable energy, child care for all, and publicly financed college. In order to do that, the grassroots have to take over the Democratic Party, and we have to vote. We had 6.8% who voted in Charlotte, North Carolina, in our last primary. We got a lot of progressives that just don't vote. Well, guess what? If you don't vote because you don't think Hillary Clinton is progressive enough, guess what you got? You know, you got to remember
too, Joel, that a lot of these people were prevented from voting. People of color.
Yes, students, yes, that's true. Students, voter suppression,
you know,
voter ID
off the voter rolls.
You're right about that. That's true.
And that's
good
what they,
point.
You know, they're all saying, well, look at the low black turnout. Black people came out to vote. Their votes were pitched in the trash.
Let's look at Michigan. As I recall, it was the vote was decided by 10,000 votes, which is like a drop in the bucket. And
well, yes,
that could easily have been those folks that were completely taken out of the opportunity to vote.
Absolutely. And if you read my article at Truthdig today, you'll see that, you know, again, as we've known before, there were 70,000 ballots in Michigan in the presidential election that came in that allegedly had no preference president on it. Can you imagine that? And of course, all in Flint and Detroit. 70,000 ballots in a state decided by 10,000, where the ballots came in, and there was no presidential preference. I mean, give me a break. We all know what happened. And what's infuriating me about Hillary Clinton is she never said a word about it. Jill Stein went into Michigan and was looking into this stuff and demanding a recount and seeing what was going on. And she was told she didn't have standing, but that Hillary Clinton could, in fact, do this. And the Clinton lawyers said no.
And the you, Harvey, you're right. And the numbers are 300,000 people in Michigan did not have a voter ID, and they were disenfranchised. 3 million people didn't vote in the last presidential election because of voter suppression, cross-checking, gerrymandering. I think we got to get rid of the Electoral College because Hillary won by 3 million votes, which means Trump lost by 3 million votes. But even whether you're talking about gerrymandering or voter suppression or 100% clean renewable energy, they're all progressive, you know, very important subjects. But if you have 80, you know, to 90 or 1,000 or 5,000 progressive groups without a strategy, then we're going to keep getting the same result. And don't you think, Harvey and Harvard, that it is time for a serious discussion with leaders? Maybe, Harvey, you know, you could lead it on this show, or you could have it in L.A. How do we take back our country from the far right wing? I don't want to be – they don't govern us. They rule us, the VRA, the Voting Rights Act. It's been gutted by the Supreme Court. That was done by Scalia, right?
So, well, it's done by, you know, the usual 5-4. I do want to get to one thing before we leave.
Sure.
We only got 8 minutes left, even not even that. Harvard, and thank you for that, Joel. That was right on target. Harvard,
sure.
You tell us very quickly, with your expertise, how Puerto Rico could be solarized. I mean, is this a pipe dream, or could it actually be done?
No, it could actually be done. And so many of the villages there, they're what, like 70, 80 towns? I forget the exact number there on the island. It's only 30 miles wide and 100 miles long. And a lot of those places would be really close to the coast. So that would be a way that ships could come in and bring the collectors and do all those kinds of things. Of course, this begs the question of how we're going to get who we're going to get behind us to pay for it and to push it politically. But again, I don't see any technological, and recognize that. I mean, putting up collectors is really, really easy.
Okay, so it's doable. We're not talking in the nonsense here.
What about no questions there.
I was in Puerto Rico, and they had these gigantic. There's so many farms. 85 to 90% of the agriculture was white, but that is the hottest place I've ever been to. There's a Yiddish word called schwitzing. I got off the plane. I was schwitzing, and boy, I was sweating. But could they not do solar farms and solar mirrors and boilers? Would that work as well?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Did we have another caller call in? Did I miss someone?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Somehow my cell phone has been going
Mark,
off, and I never get any cell phone calls. But anyway, I don't know. That's it.
Mark, is that Mark Summer?
Yeah.
This is Tara Rodriguez from Puerto Rico.
Oh.
You guys are all coming in at the end of the show here. Mark, I talked to you earlier about, and I mentioned that you have said that the Bay Area is full of smoke.
No, I was going to jump in about Harvard raised the interesting question, who could jump in on this to finance it? And I just uncovered a correspondence between Elon Musk and Ricardo Rossello, the governor of Puerto Rico. And apparently, this is from Elon Musk to Rossello, Governor Rossello. Do you want to show the world the power and... Do you want to show the world the power and scalability of your Tesla technologies? Oh, this is Rossello speaking. PR could beat
okay,
that flagship
project. Okay, wait, Mark, hold on 1 second, though. I'm going to have to ask. Tara, have you been on the line as well?
Am I on the line? Yes, I'm right here.
Okay, and Mark, Mark Summer from Northern California, and Tara, where are you?
I am right now in New York City, just coming in from Puerto Rico.
And do you know about this letter that Mark Summer is talking about between the governor of Puerto Rico and Elon Musk?
I do, but there are a lot of what we call nebulous details within that.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, I'm sorry that to get you on so late here. We're almost out of time. Tara, can you tell people how to get a hold of you? I'll ask you to come back next week, if you would, and Mark Summer as well. And I think that would be great,
because actually we're working right now with a sustainable farming plan for the whole island of Puerto Rico, which includes, obviously, solar energy. So I have a lot to talk about.
Okay, so great, Joel, great. Mark, Harvard, and Tara will have you all back next week. We are
wonderful.
Almost out of time. Tara,
it'd be an honor.
Tell us how to get a hold of you.
My email is tara@efectosombrilla, which is umbrella effect in Spanish, efectosombrilla.org. We are also found at americasforconservation.org, which is the organization that started the Puerto Rico Resiliency Fund.
All right, so Tara, if all four of you will call in at the top of the hour next week, we'll work this out somehow. Tara, I don't know how long you've been waiting, but I'm glad you spoke up. Harvard Ayers, how do we get a hold of you?
Yes, sir. Harvard G. Ayers, A-Y-E-R-S, at Gmail.
And Mark Summer?
Mark@solarizing.net, S-O-L-A-R-I-S-I-N-G. .net.
And Joel Siegel?
Yeah, hola to my sister from Puerto Rico. Joel, J-O-E-L, .r@gmail.com.
Well, you all been great. And Mark, I know that I talked with you earlier, and you've got some terrifying stories to tell about Northern California. And hopefully next week it'll be over. You're going to be on with me tomorrow at KPFK in Los Angeles. And Harvard, Joel, and Tara, you'll be with me next week, and we'll continue with this discussion. God forbid, let's hope there's not another natural disaster or unnatural disaster like Las Vegas between now and then. And hopefully, and let's all say a little prayer for this, let's hope that by next week we have a new president. Okay, I know it's Sabbath.
It sounds in the South. Amen, brother.
Yes,
yes sir.
Amen. I know it would be likely to be Mike Pence, not my first choice. But I think we have somebody in the White House who has serious dementia. And I think that the major media is facing this now. You know, he's already threatened CBS's license. He's threatening nuclear war. He's killing Puerto Rico. He's done absolutely nothing about Northern California. The people in Florida and Texas are rotting away. This man, I think the number one issue we face now is the sanity of the person with his hand near the nuclear button. And I think this is the week between, let's see what happens. Let's revisit this a week from now and see what has happened. But I am going to pray to the extent that a Buddhist can pray for... next week's show, we have somebody else in the White House. We will see you then. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, sir.
Did we evolve? Thank you so much.
We conceived. Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.